Hi, my name is Dustin Carnes, and I use a rooted HTC Hero. Now get ready for the totally awesome Android Central podcast.
Hey everybody, it's Phil here with Android Central Podcast number 4 for the week of March 21st, 2010. I'm actually recording this before CTIA, so we might have some news come out in between now and then. We might actually have other podcasts live from CTIA, we'll find out. But I wanted to sit down with our old pal Michael Manna of the T4 show. Michael, how's it going?
Oh, it's great, great. Thank you for having me on the show, Phil. I appreciate it. And I don't think I'll be able to follow Mickey Papillon, but I'll do my best.
Well, do me a favor. For the one or two people, I'm sure everybody out there is familiar with the T4 show, but the one or two who are living in a cave and aren't, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and about the site and the show. And
I think it's the reverse. I think one or two people are familiar with it and the rest of the world isn't, so, but I'll give everybody. Well, T4 show stands for Tech Today, Tech Tomorrow, and I started the podcast, the site, and my YouTube videos a little less than 3 years ago. And, you know, I was trying to think of different things. Would I do Mac? Because I'm a big Apple fanboy. I know that's not popular here on the Android Central podcast, but I like my Apple products. So I was thinking all Apple stuff, but I love cell phones. I've loved cell phones, and the cell phone junkie Mickey Papillon was one of my favorites back in the day. That's one of the first podcasts I started listening to. So I was like, man, I want to do cell phones, and I love consumer electronics, home theater, video games. And then I said, well, I got to think of some because I want to do everything. So I thought of, you know, there's technology today and I want to cover everything that's coming in the future with news and rumors and stuff like that. So I thought of the T4 show and it kind of came out and it was available on GoDaddy, which made it even easier to make the website. So, and since then I've had about maybe 150 podcasts on my own. I got about almost 600 YouTube videos and I also do the simulcast. I combined my podcast with the Mobile Tech Moment podcast with Steve Trotto, and there's also Bill Stebbins. So it's a bunch of guys sitting around talking about everything in technology, and we all have our own little specialties that come together and make a good spontaneous podcast.
So you keep yourself busy.
I try. I mean, it's pretty much akin to is basically the same thing with you and anybody else that does these tech reviews. We're all tech enthusiasts, and it's basically what we do, except we press record on a microphone or record on a camera and now document it. It's the only difference.
Well, I've been a fan for a long time, and if you haven't seen Michael's videos, go watch them. Just great unboxings, great how-tos, great reviews. Very, very professionally done.
Oh, thank you. I think today is going to pretty much prove the point, Phil, of why I chose the moniker of tech enthusiast and not expert, because I am not an expert when it comes to Android, but I am intrigued by it because it is technology, I think, that has to do a lot with what's coming tomorrow.
Well, let's get to the reason we're here today. You asked me on Twitter, if you're on Verizon, you know, obviously the big elephant in the room is the Droid as far as phones to get, but now we have the Nexus One, which is finally going to come out at some point. We still don't have a date. It might well be this week, we're hearing. In fact, Tuesday is a date that's been thrown around. So by the time you listen to the podcast, you might be able to get the Nexus One on Verizon. Don't know yet. But it's going to cause a bit of a conundrum as far as which top device to get. So you asked me that on Twitter, and I just thought that was an excellent question for anybody looking at getting a new phone. You basically have two top-tier phones, and which one am I going to spend a whole lot of money on?
Yeah, I mean, we looked at, now I'm not a fan of slide-out keyboards, and I'm not a fan of hardware keyboards after using the iPhone for so long, so I'm already leaning towards the Nexus One, and then we're going to get into the Supersonic, I'm sure, later. That's even more down the line, but the Nexus One is probably, from what I've known, a lot of iPhone users, even up to the 3GS variety, have switched over to that Nexus One. Like Leo Laporte has switched over to the Nexus One full time. Bill Stebbins, my buddy, a bunch of people I know that were dedicated iPhone 3GS users are now on the Nexus One and not missing the iPhone at all. So right then, that testimonial right there leads me to, wow, I'm back into my want to buy an unlock phone days and try it out. But you know, you don't even have to do the unlock phone thing anymore because Google Nexus One phone is basically going to be the first phone carried on all four carriers, which I was listening to Android Central number 3 with Dieter, and that's pretty unique and new, and I don't think it's ever been done before when the hardware is exactly the same, pretty much the specs and everything else are pretty much the same, excuse me, on every single carrier.
Yeah, and definitely with the way that Google has been selling it as far as the AT&T version now, and I need to quit calling it the AT&T version. It's not an AT&T version. It just happens to use AT&T's 3G bands. Same with Same with the T-Mobile version. And for those of you who really love the nitty-gritty, we're talking the 850 and 1900 bands for 3G on AT&T and 1700 megahertz for T-Mobile. That's the only difference between these phones that I've been able to tell. I've got both of them sitting right here. As far as on Verizon goes, the first question I'm going to ask anybody is, can you live without a physical keyboard? If so, I would go with the Nexus One, and for a couple reasons. It's got an AMOLED screen, which, as long as you're indoors, looks great. It feels better in the hand. It's a little more round. I do love the feel of the Droid. It's heavy. It's industrial. It feels like a man's phone, for lack of a better term. That said, I know plenty of women who use it and love it. But the thing is just a solid, solid device. I can live without the physical keyboard on the Nexus One because the Droid's physical keyboard is just that bad for me. I came from a Touch Pro 2 on Windows Mobile, and that probably has the best slider keyboard out there. And even then, I'm not a huge fan of slider keyboards either. I started out with Trios back in the day and just love the front-facing QWERTY keyboard.
Yeah, I'm looking at that too. Just real quick point. Mm-hmm. You and I probably really look at stuff just like anybody else out there who's a tech reviewer, enthusiast, or whatever that really pays attention. Number one, you want to do the things the quickest way possible, the easiest way possible. So sliding out the keyboard is one extra step. Then the number two thing, especially in the 3% category that I'm in, when things break all the time, it lends credence to the fact that there's one more thing that can break on a slider device, and they haven't necessarily got the slider hinges right on a lot of these devices.
It's really solid on the Droid. It's almost too stiff. It takes a little bit of force to open the thing up. When you look at the Droid next to something like the Devour almost springs open, and it's a solid feeling phone too, the Motorola Devour. Motorola just makes good hardware, period. I don't think I've had a phone that from them that just feels cheap. Hell, even go back to the Razer days. I mean, that's a solid phone that people still use, and you could probably have one of the original ones and it would still work. So Motorola makes really good hardware. The Nexus One, as far as hardware goes, is actually really good too. It's, you know, it's a slate phone. It's just a giant screen. You can call it a black slab. It's got a great, great camera. It's got a 5-megapixel camera on it, whereas the Droid's camera is less than stellar.
And still, that's been even after the update?
Even after the update. Well, I mean, the optics haven't changed. You can only do so much with software.
Mm.
So, it's a little better. There are the whole pink tint issues going on that maybe they bother you, maybe they don't. I don't know. I haven't really noticed that. But the Nexus One's camera is great. That's what we used live in Barcelona at Mobile World Congress
to cover
the Windows Phone 7 series launch. We had Kevin from Crackberry literally taking the pictures live with my Nexus One and Dieter's Nexus One and putting them up in the live blog. So you're actually able to use it that much.
Oh, that's very cool. Very cool. You know what the funny thing is? You just talked about, we're talking about all this stuff with using the phone and you're telling me things because I don't know, because of the one thing I think that is a real bottleneck with the Nexus One, you can't go into a store and play with it.
Yeah, and that's a big issue as far as getting it adopted by more people. We've seen all these stories that, oh, it's not selling well, and I've had to write on a number of occasions now, that's not really Google's plan for this thing. I wish it was. It's a really good phone, and HTC is just a great manufacturer, and I love 99% of the products they put out. But yeah, you can't walk into the store and try one and see if you're going to like it, to see if you're going to like the keyboard. And that said about the keyboard, there are a number of keyboards. We're in the midst of working up a keyboard roundup, and there are just a whole bunch of keyboards you can get to use on this thing, so that's an advantage as well.
Yeah, well, you know, what's funny is we were talking about the Nexus One because Bill Stebbins, like I said, got the Nexus One. I think what's it, around 200,000? I was listening to episode 3. It's around 200,000 as of air date that you guys did that podcast with Dieter. 200,000 units is sort of, the analogy of the iPad. No one really took a look at it, but people are saying it's great and buying it. I mean, it's not on the level of the iPad, but still, you have to think 200,000 purchases of a cell phone without playing with it or testing it out or actually using it in the store is a pretty good number.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that you can't even just walk by and see in the store. No advertising other than Google AdSense, which is not a small thing, but it's not like you've seen it in TV commercials and print advertisements. So it's really apples and oranges when you compare it to the Droid and the iPhone as far as marketing and sales goes.
Yeah. Now, let's say, I mean, I'm sure we'll go into the software and everything, but I have a quick question about support. Now, there was a big thing about there was no phone support. Now there is phone support for the Nexus One. What happens, like my iPhone 3GS, just basically for some reason, the radio started going crazy and it was switching out from Edge to the Circle to 3G. And that's not even when I was on the road that made me want to consider the Droid phones. I was just talking about in general in my area here in Tampa. And I went into the Apple store and they swapped it right out for me. And I had a brand new iPhone, maybe refurbished, but I had another iPhone 10 minutes later that I brought home. Now, obviously, there's going to be some lemons. And like I said before, since I fall in the 3% category that always gets the defect, how does Google handle exchanges, troubleshooting, and even technical support on the phone?
And that was a problem in the beginning because Google said, well, don't talk to us. You got to talk to T-Mobile. If you got the T-Mobile, especially you got the subsidized version, or you have to talk to HTC, they actually made the phone. Google has since then kind of fixed things. I think they were probably surprised a little bit at the whole customer service angle, and that's really surprising for me. For as big of a company as they are, they should have anticipated that, yes, people are going to have problems. How are we going to handle that? They have since come out with a phone number that you can call for help. You can go online. Basically, your start and end points need to be google.com/phone, and they have customer support on there now. Here's a return section, how to make a return if you have problems with your orders. They have extensive forums in there that I look at almost every day just to see what kind of issues people are still having, be it hardware or software. It really is a weird mix of ecosystems as to who's responsible for what. But make no mistake about it, this is a Google phone. Google ordered it. Google, for all intents and purposes, spec'd it out and said, here's what we want. HTC, help us build it.
They even have their own ETF, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, then there was the early termination fee saga. In addition to T-Mobile's, if you cancel your contract early, you would get charged, I forget how much, by T-Mobile. But then if you had bought the subsidized version of the phone, then Google would charge you a restocking fee or something. It was like $250, $300, something like that. So it was not insignificant. But at the same time, I understand. And if you're breaking a contract, I think you need to understand that you're breaking a contract. And these things have, you know, there are consequences of breaking contracts. You can't just change your mind when you, you know, agreed to it in the first place. That's why I bought both my phones unlocked. Don't want to have to worry about that. I'm not going to be breaking contracts anytime soon just because I don't need to. You really have a need to. But I just didn't want to be beholden to the carriers any more than I already am.
Yeah, I mean, that's good, too. But usually if you buy the unlocked phone from any company, I know Google has it as their phone. But, you know, to have two ETFs confuses people, and that can really lead to a lot of bad taste in people's mouths. Now, here's the thing. What if I do get the defective Nexus One, which is almost a sure bet when I get it? Are they pretty good about, oh, okay, we'll send you out another one? Because obviously there's no other shipping option. You get it overnighted to you when you buy it off of the google.com/phone site. Do they offer the same kind of, do you know anybody that's had this problem where they said, oh, we're going to overnight you another phone?
I've seen people in the forum say, yeah, I had to send mine back. Just looking here on Google site, it looks like you have to contact them first and give them your order number and all that stuff. And I assume they will write back to you. And that's a good question. We got to track down somebody and go through that step by step.
Maybe I should just buy one because it's almost.
Yeah, yeah. When you have your inevitable problem, send it back and then let us know how that goes.
You know, now we have the chat room open right now. We got a few people in here. And the biggest question right now, we were talking off air, and I think we brought it up a little bit now, is when is the Nexus One coming to Verizon? Is there any set date yet?
March 23rd was a date that we'd heard. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. It's been weird. And Dieter and I were talking about this the other day. With everybody else, we get leaks. We get leaks from Sprint people. We get leaks from T-Mobile people and from AT&T people. When Google's been putting this stuff out, we haven't heard about it. When they released the software update that brought multi-touch, we didn't know it was coming. That just totally hit us by surprise. And then it was cool to see. It was nice to be surprised in this day and age where, you know, we're covering every possible leak. So I don't know. It could well be this week. It could well be in conjunction with CTIA, which is the big trade show in Las Vegas, and we'll be there live. I just don't know. I hope it's soon. They've been saying coming soon in spring 2010 and forever now, so it's time.
Yeah, one other thing about the Verizon thing, Burger 43 brings it up in the chat room, Phil. He talked about how the Droid is kind of like the analogy of what the iPhone did to the AT&T network, that there are some issues with it being, you know, bogged down from the Droid. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you heard about that? Is that, I mean, I've heard people talk about that. I didn't see it when I used the Droid over that weekend, but that was just for a 2-day period.
I didn't have any problems. Yeah, for as long as I used the Droid, I didn't have any network problems. I mean, it really comes down to where you live and how many people are there and how many people are on which network. There's not one answer to that. I wish there was, but there's just not, and we're all going to have to get over that.
So pretty much I should just use Cricket and I'll get the fastest speeds possible.
The number one thing we tell somebody when they say is, what phone should I get, is, you know, what carrier are you on? If the network sucks in your town, then get off that network. And it's that simple.
Yeah. But the Nexus One, like we just talked about, they're on pretty much all the major carriers. So now you can pretty much answer that and cut down the time of the conversation by saying, if you really believe in the Nexus One.
And the fact that you can do it on an unlocked nature makes it even that much better.
True.
Because, you know, I bought the Nexus One with the T-Mobile 3G bands thinking, all right, T-Mobile will eventually get 3G up here in my town in Pensacola, Florida, and they still haven't. And you know what? I'm tired of waiting. So I've got the AT&T one now, and AT&T is fine for me up here and for most part. So,
Do you want to advertise that you're going to be selling that T-Mobile one?
I think, all right, you guys will hear it first. We're going to give it away.
Oh, that's good.
Haven't decided how yet, but we're going to do a contest through the site or the podcast. And we'll take care of that after CTIA, just because we got so much going on now. But one lucky reader out there will get the Nexus One that I took to Spain and back and that we use in all our reviews and all that stuff. So somebody out there is going to get it. And it's still in really good shape.
And they need to check and see, make sure they live in the T-Mobile area before they get it.
Yes. Because
they might be, not think they want anything if they don't live in an area.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me see. Obviously, we'll get to the supersonics. Sort of like nobody knows anything, but I'm sure you'll be covered.
Let's talk about that. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. The supersonic is a long rumored Sprint phone that might or might not exist. We don't actually know at this point, though. We know we've seen it. It's out there. The question is, where is it coming? When it's coming? And we're hearing it's going to be a WiMAX phone. It's going to be a 4G phone, and just, you know, in order of magnitude times faster than what we have now. And there are questions about that. I mean, do we need a phone that's that fast? We need that much data? And I tell you, after seeing the Windows Phone 7 series with Netflix movies being streamed to it, I think the answer is yes.
Yes, but I mean, more so, the hardware is really impressive. 4.1-inch screen?
Mm-hmm.
Huge screen. It's basically the HD2.
Yeah, not quite as big. HD2 is what, 4.2 or 4.3? I forget which, but it's huge. 4.1 is just gigantic.
Yeah, so you're looking at hardware specs that are good. You're looking at Sprint, which basically they're going to subsidize the phone. It may be cheaper than the Nexus One, plus the fact that you're going to get all the bells and whistles with the plan. So if you pay $70 a month, you get your GPS, you get unlimited, 5 gig data. You'll probably be able to tether sporadically without getting, you know, caught. And also, you're going to get pure openness with the supersonic if it's on Android. Yeah, Sprint really doesn't mess with the stuff except putting on Sprint TV and all their Sprint stuff, which I think is usable. I think the GPS is great. I think Sprint TV is good to have if it works. Now, we're talking about an EVDO Rev A, which it buffers a lot. So if you live in a 4G area and you can get that WiMAX phone, then I assume that you're going to love it, because, you know, your videos are going to start up. You're going to be able to watch stuff on demand. You'll be able to watch ESPN mobile TV. It's going to be a good investment. I don't think they're going to raise the plan prices.
Probably not, or at least not at first. It'll be interesting to see. You know, with the Sprint Overdrive, there's no cap right now on the 4G data. There is still, it's either 2 gigabyte or 5 gigabyte cap on 3G data. But as far as 4G WiMAX data goes, there's no cap at this point. Now, there's not that many people using it, I understand. But obviously, they won't let that go forever. So they'll have to change something at some point. I tell you, another difference you get is in the hardware. I think from here on out, we won't see HTC making any devices, at least not ordered by Google, that have a trackball. They're all going to have that trackpad that we first saw in The Desire and The Legend that we saw at Mobile World Congress. And that's a good change, I think. We've had questions about how much travel you get on a trackpad as opposed to a trackball. Really, I could get rid of either one. I don't use them that much. You got to have them for cut and paste, but I also managed to do that with my finger pretty well. So, but the trackpad is a much more elegant solution for that.
Okay, now here's where we are right now. And this is my one thing that scares me from buying the Nexus One. And you're talking about the Supersonic now. You're talking about the Desire, which is, I think, going to be the Incredible on Verizon, if I'm not mistaken.
It's maybe, much, yeah.
Yeah, I like that because that has the Sensui, and I'm a fan of that. But now you're talking about, the HTC Hero, Samsung Moment. Not that it qualifies, but you're talking about the backflip, but that's an Android device. You're talking about the Aris, you're talking about the Droid, you're talking about the Nexus One, you're talking about the Desire, you're talking about the Supersonic, you're talking about possibly the Incredible. Now it's starting, in my opinion, Phil, and you're talking about that combined with different versions of Android running all over the place, and you know where I'm going with this. This reminds me a lot of Windows Mobile.
Oh, totally. And I've been saying that for a long time.
It's scary because you buy something and you're like, well, am I going to get the update? Am I not going to get the update? Is this going to be obsolete? Snapdragon, the 1 gig Snapdragon processor. By the time the Supersonic comes out, they might have a 1.2 or 1.5. And you're like, oh, God, you know.
Well, that's always going to happen with technology. And we're all just going to have to come to terms with that and open up our wallets, I think. I'm really on board the whole ROM cooking community in Android. It took me a couple months to get familiar enough with the OS to dive into it. But I've since unlocked my phone. I've since put on, I put Sense on it, actually. I put the new HTC Sense that was ripped off the Desire. I've run that on the Nexus One and did review of it on Android Central. And I'm now running the Cyanogen Mod ROM, which is pretty much, it looks and feels like stock Android from the Nexus One, but it's been compiled from the open source project, or from the ASOP, what's the A stand for? I just totally forgot. But it's the open source community, basically. So it's been optimized. There's some nice tweaks in there. USB tethering's built in. The color trackball support, where it'll flash different colors.
Okay, look there. We're talking about that now. Obviously, doing all this stuff. Now, the thing I heard about the Nexus One, I know rooting is sort of a bit of a complicated process, especially if you have a Mac. But I heard that you could actually change the ROM on your Nexus One right on the phone. Is that true?
Oh, I did this the other night. You could do it with Windows Mobile. It was a little, well, it wasn't really any more tricky. You just had to get the boot image and put it on an SD card and reboot and all that stuff. And really, flashing ROMs on Android is a lot like flashing ROMs on Windows Mobile. Getting set up to do it took a minute to be able to root. You just had to make sure you had things in the right folder, and you got to do stuff in a command line. And it's kind of a pain, whereas with Windows Mobile HTC devices, you go and get the unlocker, you plug your phone in, you run it, and that's it. And then you have what's called the RUU, the ROM update utility for HTC, that basically cooked ROMs are fed in through this thing. And you plug your phone in, you run the app, and that's it. It's a little different on Android, where you have to unlock the bootloader first, which is really just a matter of plugging in your phone, running something, or hitting something in the command line. There's some good tutorials out there, and it's just kind of a matter of finding them and going through the steps in the right order and making sure you have everything done. Once that's done, there's a really cool thing in Android called the recovery mod, not a bootloader, but the recovery module that's built into the bootloader. It's kind of like the BIOS on a computer. And within that, you have custom recovery units, and there's one called Amon Ra, like the old Egyptian stuff, that basically you do what's called an Android backup, and it's a snapshot. Remember, these are all Linux-based phones, so you do a snapshot of the entire OS, the entire phone. It's like copying over the hard drive and the partitions and everything and just making an image of it. And so you can do a backup that way and then do, you know, put some other ROM on it. And if you don't like it, you just restore the backup and you're right back where you left off. And it really is elegant and a nice way to do things. That's what I do when I go back and test Sense every now and then. I just do a backup and then switch back and forth.
Yeah, that's super geek cred right there. They're not going to release a Black Rain version of Android, are they? It takes 20 seconds. It would probably be a good thing.
Yeah, I wish it was a little easier to unlock a bootloader and to root. Rooting and unlocking are kind of the same thing, and they're kind of not. You know, I'm not a Linux expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I understand how that works now. Basically, when you have the stock phone, you do not have access to every file on that phone. There's a thing in Linux called the root user, and that's what you're gaining access to when you quote unquote root your phone. So it's really not a big deal. Yeah, it voids the warranty, sure, but you know, if you're going to do that, then you're not really worried about warranties anyway, are you?
Exactly. And hey, I'm sure they have a guide on androidcentral.com, correct? Since we'll plug.
We do.
See, we do the plug to the site, segue it over. yeah, that's the thing about this site. I mean, the whole smartphone experts conglomerate of websites is great because that's how I homebrewed my Pre. They had the complete, Pre Central had more stuff up than Palm, knew more about the Pre than Palm. And it apparently seems like Android Central and XDA developers are teaching the people at Google and HTC and everything more about their phones and their software than they know. It's kind of like free. Yep. It's kind of like a free R&D for them.
Mm-hmm. And rooting really isn't as scary as it sounds. It's not a big a leap as it is to flash initially to do hard SPL in Windows Mobile. There are odd instances where bad things can happen, but I haven't seen many at all, and I really wouldn't worry about it. And at this point, I almost encourage everybody to go ahead and root and try custom ROMs and do backups and just go to town on the thing.
Yeah, even Dieter hasn't done it yet, and he's way ahead of it. I mean, he's done stuff with Windows Mobile in the past, and he's held off on it until probably, I mean, as we do this podcast, he might be rooting his device.
Yeah, we're an odd bunch to think about when it comes to doing stuff like that, though, because as much as I want to hack around with the phone, I also need to have access to kind of the stock versions and understand what people are going through with, you know, stock Android and stock Sense and things like that. So, you know, just because we don't do it isn't necessarily an indication of it being tough or of us being scared to do it. It's just sometimes it's not always the opportune time to do it.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is Burger 43, he works in corporate America. So he's talking about, Android is an enterprise network nightmare with the inability to push security policies to the device, like password and remote wipe. I know the Pre had that problem too with WebOS, but is that something that you've been asked a lot about? If you have Gmail, you're set. You know, with a Google phone, it's all integrated in Google Voice, stuff like that. It's perfect for that. But what about the enterprise? I mean, it seems
right.
To...
Android and Exchange are still a little wonky. And if you depend on Exchange, I would say either go with another phone at this point or stick with Windows Mobile, which is hands down the best Exchange device you can have. Yeah, it's an issue, and I really wish they would fix that, and hopefully they will. Hopefully, whether it's in a future version of Android or some third-party thing that'll really fix Exchange productivity. And I miss Exchange. Back when I worked in an office every day, I had Exchange. I loved it, lived it. Now that I'm using Google every day and Gmail and Google Apps, Android's perfect for me. That's going to be a big sticking point. And especially with Windows Phone 7 series coming out, and we're just not entirely sure. We just don't know how it's going to look and feel with enterprise yet. If Android wants to gain a better foothold in business, then yeah, they need to up that support. Absolutely.
Yeah. I will say this though, if you have a small business or if you're an independent contractor, if you're anybody that lives around, Google Voice and Gmail, man, you want to give Android a try, because the Google Voice integration is something that it's so seamless and so nice that you can pretty much have all your phones routed through the Google Voice, but not only your phones, but you can also basically do text messaging, and you have that really do have that unified number for everything. And I really do like that about the Android devices.
Yeah. I wouldn't even call it integration. It's just, once you turn it on, it's just there. It works. And I use, in fact, I need to put it back on this new phone. I used a little app that makes it location aware, so it can tell when I'm in my house, and when I'm in my house, go ahead and ring the home phone. When I leave the house, and I forget what it, you know, the distance it's set to trigger on, but when I leave the house, when I go somewhere else, it won't ring the home phone. That's something I wish was actually built into Google Voice. I can understand privacy issues with that. But it's a cool
that's another oxymoron, Google and privacy issues.
I know.
God, that's Skynet right there. That's the scary part about Google, is I call it Skynet from time to time, because it really is. You're giving up a lot, but you're gaining a lot of, like you said, not even integration, but it's more embedded in the entire OS, if that's a better term. It's
It's
kind of like, you know, meshed, integrated, whatever, just like a big Skynet.
Well, and the privacy issues are not something to be ignored. I think that is a serious thing. I just kind of gave up a long time ago and gave into it. And doing this online stuff, you know, running the websites, and even back in the newspaper I worked at, I kind of had to live a little more publicly than I used to. So that's something you kind of need to make a conscious decision about, or at least be aware of it.
Yeah. Am I asking good questions so far? Because I don't know. I mean,
I'm the one I'm going to ask.
What's that?
We'll have to ask everybody else later.
Yeah. You got some haters in the forums and in the comments section. So I'm not, if they start doing that, I know I belong then. So it's good. Well, you're talking about apps. You're talking about apps. And one of the, you know, there are some apps, obviously, we talked about it off air, that aren't, you can't even get in the app store. And we'll talk about that in a second if that's cool. But I one thing that really confuses me at times, and I'm spoiled by the Apple App Store with the iPhone, is the app, you know, whatever it's called on Android with the Android App Catalog or the App Store, it's pretty confusing. Like, you're talking about this app where it's location aware. But man, I wouldn't know that unless you gave me the name of it and I had to search for it or go to Android Central or one of these other Android sites to find it. It's a pretty confusing, you know, it's right up there. I mean, it's not as confusing, in my opinion, than, say, the app catalog on the Pre, but it's still pretty hard to find an app.
The app market is a mess. There are, and this is something Dieter and I talked about on the last podcast, and I've written about it a few ways. We actually just did a really good post over this past weekend about something called App Brain. Before we get into that, let me back up. There are, quote-unquote, 30,000 apps in the market. That said, there are apps, and then there are apps. In the market, you have normal applications, sure. Then you have keyboards and keyboard skins and themes and my shining example, Sexy Ladies number 342. So, you know, there are apps and then there are apps. Keyboard skins are treated just like, you know, they're treated as an app as far as numbers go, just like a widget is, or just like, you know, something like Seismic is. So there are apps and then there are apps. And while there might be 30,000 things in the market, there aren't really 30,000 usable apps, and there's just a whole lot of crap in there right now, and it's a big, big issue. So this thing called App Brain came out, and they have tapped into the Android market, and they're basically trying to separate the wheat from the chaff. They will give you recommendations. They will, it works on a desktop browser and then ties into your phone as well. There's an app you run on your phone, so you can actually search the market through the desktop browser, which is something you can't do right now. You can go to something like AndroLib and see all the apps. But with App Brain, you can go in and see your recommendations and say, all right, I like this. I want to install it on my phone. Click a checkbox on the desktop browser, and the next time you go to the app on your phone, it'll say, oh, by the way, you said you want to install this. Let's go ahead and do it now. Really, really handy, and it's really far time that we see something like that. I'm really looking at Google, hopefully this spring at Google I.O. Maybe they'll announce they found a way to clean up the market. It is a mess. There's a lot of good stuff out there. And just like with the App Store, you know, especially in the beginning when it just grew in leaps and bounds, it's kind of a pain sorting through and finding stuff. And that's something we're focusing on now, is bringing good apps to light.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I read up a little bit on it yesterday, and it's you know what I noticed that's kind of a cool little thing is that that barcode graphic.
Mm-hmm.
With the
QR codes.
Yeah, could you explain that? Because I know that the people talked about the these codes, and people actually talked about there was a way, because of your Google phone, that I could pretty much, if they instituted it, I could go in to say a Hilton, go into a hotel, and I think you discussed this on a past podcast, and even if my phone is off, it will detect the code associated with my phone and check me into the hotel. I mean, is that, I think that was the example that was given, that these what are they, QR codes?
They're called QR codes. They're little black and white codes. They look like a series of black squares in different configurations. And what you do is you scan them with your camera. They're not new. They're really, really big over in Japan. And you scan them, and the app, I'm not sure if it's locally, if it shoots it up to a server first, but it scans the code and then says, all right, this code is a website. It is a, you know, it's a URL. Or in the case of the market basically is a URL too that points to each app. So it scans it, it recognizes it. So in the case of apps, and we run a whole bunch every week when we're talking about apps, you scan it and it says, all right, here's where this app is in the market, go find it. So that's really all those are. Microsoft has their own version called Microsoft Tag. They're a little different kind of code. These are color and a little more three-dimensional and supposedly can hold more data. And in fact, there's now a Microsoft Tag app on Android, so it's not just Windows Mobile anymore. So it's a couple ways to kind of make things easier. Instead of just seeing a URL on a sign or something, you would just scan it with your phone. Your phone takes a picture and focuses on it and recognizes it. Google has started, and I forget the name of it, but they're working with businesses to basically make signs on the front of their establishments to where you can walk by and scan it, and it'll give you search information, menu information, stuff like that.
Oh, so that was the theoretical application, say in a hotel, where you could pretty much do that and it'll know.
Yeah.
If you booked it through your Gmail account, say that you paid, you know, you got your confirmation to the Gmail account, now you're checked into the hotel, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so we're a little ways from actually doing that, but theoretically, yeah, that would absolutely be possible.
Oh, okay. You see, that's what makes it interesting. That's what makes it more of a convergence device, and that's why right at this point exactly is why I'm using the iPhone 3GS. It's more of a convergence device. It's one device that gives me my GPS on the road, gives me my iPod functionality, gives me my, well, it doesn't really make good phone calls, but it does phone calls sometimes. And, you know, I get my email and I get it all there. And that's another thing, talking about software. If I plug my Nexus One, say, into my Mac, now I'm obviously a little stuck. Now I have to go with an app like DoubleTwist, which I've heard less than stellar remarks about that lately, or I have to pay the $40 to get the missing sync for Android, which is an excellent application. But now you're talking about reinvesting more and more money into things to sync this for a phone that maybe in about 3 or 4 months I see the Supersonic and I go, oh, geez, I got to have that phone now.
Well, and again, that's life. DoubleTwist, a lot of people like. I don't actually sync music to my phone. I'm one of those weird people who likes having a separate device for that. But DoubleTwist and The Missing Sync are two excellent apps for it. And in fact, T-Mobile has gone so far as to license DoubleTwist. If you buy a T-Mobile Android phone now, and as soon as you plug it in, it's going to install DoubleTwist for it, or ask you if you want to install DoubleTwist. And that started with the MyTouch 3G Fender Edition. So it's really come a long ways. I find it funny that all of these other apps look and feel like iTunes. And I'm not an iTunes fan by any stretch of the imagination, but it's interesting to see that, you know, they're pretty much copying a good thing.
Yeah, I will say this though, I'm on the Markspace site for Missing Sync in Android. Mm-hmm. It does. There's two things you want to know. Now, if you're going from say a pre to a Nexus One, you can cross upgrade to the DR platform for a minimum upgrade fee. I think it's $20, half the price of the full price. Which is pretty cool. I think it's worth it. You know, you get some of your money back. And one of the things that the Missing Sync for Android does really that the iPhone has never done is it syncs your contacts via Bluetooth.
Oh,
that's
see,
a new feature.
Go.
It supports the Droid now, too. I didn't think it, I guess it didn't support the Droid. I don't know if it supports the Nexus One. It does. Yeah, it's got the Nexus One up there, the Hero, and now the Droid. So I think that's a great, proximity sync, contacts calendars automatically wirelessly, not just contacts. I guess they just added that.
And, you know, with the Nexus One, they're doing something interesting. Google sells a desktop dock for it right now, too. Nothing actually plugs into your phone. If you look at the bottom of the Nexus One, there are three little gold contacts, and those are little battery contacts. So the thing just sits there in the dock. But it also has Bluetooth, and that was something when we saw the FCC leaks come out on it, we're like, why do you have Bluetooth in a desktop dock? Turns out what happens is, as soon as it's that close to the dock, it says, all right, the phone's here, and we have an audio out port. So if you'd like, you can stream all the audio from your phone out through this dock, and then you can connect the dock to a stereo, to a computer, whatever. And so that's a cool little touch. The dock itself can be a little janky because nothing actually connects to the phone. It can fall out easily. But I use the thing next to my bed, and it works great.
You're killing me. You're making me want to spend more money. Well, you know what? That is a very good thing that it works. Is that would lead me to believe, because there's been phones in the past, and I'm just talking about my experience with 3%, but I know that a lot of times, especially with the iPhone, through different versions of the iPhone, the Bluetooth was less than stellar. It seems to have gotten better with the firmware that I'm on now and with the 3GS, but you have to admit, there are certain devices that if you're trying to stream, say, your Bluetooth stereo headphones while you're at the gym or listening to or watching movies or anything like that, you're going to have a lot of problems. Have you had the experience of using anything like Bluetooth stereo headphones with music or video.
I'm having an issue with Bluetooth on the Nexus One right now, actually. I got the Motorola HX1 Endeavor headset that Renee and I from the iPhone blog took a look at back at CES. And so I'm trying to use it with the Nexus One, and nobody can hear me. Nobody can hear me speaking. So I try it out with any of the other 36 phones I have laying around here, and it works just fine. It's a problem with the Bluetooth stack on the Nexus One, and it's the same problem on... Yeah, here I go again calling it the AT&T version, but with the new version and the old version of the phone. So there's an issue there. Now, you can, that's not inherent to the Nexus One, although in this case it is. You can have Bluetooth problems on any phone. It's just, it's a software thing.
Yeah, I have had the problem. I haven't recently, like I said, now I'm on 313, and I have had the problem with the Pre using Sprint TV. It's almost unusable, at least for me. So I guess it's not such an easy thing to do, but it seems like the Bluetooth stack works for all the syncing and everything. It just doesn't seem to... is it just phone calls, or have you tried to play music or anything through Bluetooth?
You know, it works fine with the desktop dock, and that's the only way I've tried it so far. I'm going to have to test that out some more. This is a relatively new problem for me. And I don't use Bluetooth that often. I used to use it in the car a lot more than I do now to stream podcasts. But it's something to be aware of, I think. It's not something to be overly concerned about, because I think it's going to come down to what Bluetooth device you're trying to use. Maybe it's just that it doesn't play well with Motorola devices. I don't know, because the speaker in my car is Motorola, too. I'm going to have to do some more testing before I can really have a definitive answer for that.
Yeah, I think it's a good point to make, too, because a lot of more people are using Bluetooth, and not to belabor the point, but there's no data that I saw on the radiation on the Nexus One, because they have that radiation level meter, and the last thing you want to do is try to put a cell phone up to your ear too much these days, especially if it has a high radiation level, and that could be all, like people are talking about, that could be all being hypochondriacs and being paranoid, but I'd rather not take the chance and use a Bluetooth device to talk. So that's sure. Something that data is not out yet on the Nexus One, or even I didn't even see anything on the Droid yet. So it's pretty important if you can't use Bluetooth, you know, to try to figure out what the problem is.
Well, and really what I would suggest is that when you're getting new things, when you're getting a new Bluetooth headset or something like that, you're going to be tempted to rip into the packaging. Just be careful, because 9 times out of 10, you can return stuff pretty quickly if you need to, and if it doesn't
work. Oh, you've seen my unboxings, huh?
Oh, yeah, totally.
I get pretty excited. I'm sorry. People have talked about that. People talk more about the Batarang unboxing knife than the actual product. I do that. Everybody, you know what? I do have a question. We're talking about software, going back to that. Okay, now say I go to google.com/phone and I finally decide to buy the Nexus One, or be, you know, pretty much any. I would say Nexus One, because it has a lot more features for voice input, for navigation. It would probably be all the bells and whistles I want built into the OS. What are the top 5 things you would recommend, whether it be accessories or software, or 5 of each, whatever you want? I mean, you have me spend this much money so far. So what would you recommend? Let's say top 5 software, Phil. What would you recommend I buy right away?
Let me see. I'm just flipping through my phone here. I listen to a whole lot of podcasts. We just did a podcatcher roundup. And in fact, it wasn't even our suggestions. We reached out and had people in the forums tell us what their top 5 podcatchers are. Google has a pretty good one called Listen that they use. I use BeyondPod. That's a paid app. I don't mind paying for apps. I know a lot of people don't want to spend $2 and $3 and $5 and $6, whatever, for apps. But I really just, on principle, enjoy paying for apps, because I know developers use them, and I know how tough it is to get things sold and to have them fare well in the market.
Pay $35 for an IM app in Windows Mobile. So
yeah, exactly.
$6 is a bargain.
Barcode scanner, like we were talking about, for those QR codes, that's a good one. AppBrain, as far as searching through the market, that's good. I use something called Flight Track, for especially now that I'm traveling a little bit. Excellent, excellent app. What you can do, it ties into an online service called TripIt, if you go to TripIt.com and sign up. And then what you do is you sign in to TripIt from Flight Track, and then when you get your confirmation email for your flights, you just forward it to, I think it's like plans@TripIt.com, and then it automatically shoots it up to your phone. So now I just hit the app, and I see, all right, here are all my flights to CTIA and back, just right in front of me. No muss, no fuss. So that's kind of a must-have for me. Gmail, obviously. Google Goggles is another really cool one. As far as scanning things goes, this is one that Google developed. You take a picture of something, and then Google shoots that picture, and here we go up to privacy issues again, but it shoots it up to their servers, analyzes the picture, and tries to recognize what it was you took a picture of. If you take a picture of the Eiffel Tower, it will, you know, scan it and say, here's the Eiffel Tower, and give you Google search results. I'm going to have to try it in Vegas next week and see if it works at the fake Eiffel Tower at Paris there. That's a really cool app. Whole bunch of music streaming music apps, you know, Last.fm, Slacker, Pandora, and a few other ones. Whole bunch of games, you know, Twitter clients. We did a big Twitter client SKC thing, you know, asking everybody their top Twitter clients. I use Seismic. There's one called Twitter, I think is how it's pronounced. It's a French sounding name. Twidroid, that's another big one. So obviously Twitter's huge. Taskkiller, we did a really good column last weekend. Jerry Hildenbrand wrote it up on memory management in Android. And it's kind of similar to Windows Mobile and kind of not. A lot of people want to have total control over their apps and what's running at any given time. So Taskkiller is a good one for that. Whole bunch of weather apps like we're used to.
Is that a big deal going back to Taskkiller? Because I know they were talking about memory leaks. We didn't talk about it, but there was memory leaks with the SMS, and people were using hand-sent SMS to solve that problem. Is there still a problem with that, or do you need something like Taskkiller?
Sometimes you do. I've had apps just kind of hang on me every now and then, and it's just nice to be able to kill them and kill the process and restart them. I don't have any big issues with memory leaks. I think you have enough memory and enough horsepower with these phones, it's not that big an issue. But it's just kind of security. If something does go wrong, you can just shut down the app real quick.
Yeah. One thing about Android that I noticed that I really wish it would implement like the iPhone does is use the built-in storage, the full built-in storage for the applications. I don't know why they don't do that, because the Droid has 16 gig. A lot of these have built-in at least 8 gigs of storage built into the device nowadays, you know, if not 16. So.
Yeah, I mean, they say it's privacy issues sometimes. They say you have to partition things off differently for the systems. And I understand why they want to leave the bulk of it for mass storage. But yeah, and Google has said they're going to fix the whole installing apps to the SD card thing. I've never been one to really do that, especially on Windows Mobile. Things could get a little janky when you do that. How many apps do you need on a phone at any given time? And I know I'll get email because of that, but I haven't run into the limit yet. You know, if I don't need something, I uninstall it. That's just kind of the way I work with it. I want to keep as little on my phone as I can, because that'll just keep it running better.
Yeah. Well, I know deleting the apps are pretty easy on the Android OS, but there's nothing that hangs around after you delete it, correct? It doesn't have any kind of...
You can get, because most of the apps will cache things on the storage card automatically, which is a good thing. That way it's not just like a Maps app won't keep files just clogging up your phone. So, in fact, we did another column, or I guess that was part of the memory management. No, it wasn't. It was a previous column where Jerry ran through how to keep your phone clean and what to go through and look at and what to delete and what not to. Again, if it's not something you're worried about, I wouldn't worry about it.
Here's a very important question. We travel now. You travel a bit more. I travel all the time. Now, one of the things, you know, you don't want to pay $10 a month for Telenav, or pay $70, $80, $90, $100 for something in the App Store for your iPhone for GPS. Mm-hmm. I use the Google Navigation on the Droid, and I really, really liked it. The bringing it up was a little weird. That took a little bit of practice when I did the I did voice input to look for an address or a town or a restaurant. It worked flawlessly, but it was just a little bit of the UI to get Google Nav to open up and not Google Maps. But that's a garage door, by the way. Sorry. but with Google Nav, how does it work? Does it work pretty well on an AT&T 3G network? Because I've heard some stories where it had a little trouble locking. On the Droid, it locked instantly, but that's a network thing. And that's something people should think about. If they use the GPS a lot, they may want a stronger cellular network as Verizon to use that navigation software.
Well, sure. As far as GPS locking, that's not carrier dependent at all. Although, well, yeah, I say at all, when you have assisted GPS or AGPS, sure, that'll tie into servers. But no, it finds where I am very quickly. I used it yesterday as I drove over to Alabama and back.
AT&T version, right? Not to say version. Yeah. But you have two Nexus Ones. I have to clarify this.
Yeah. No, I'm using the AT&T one because I'm ready to have 3G back. I don't have a T-Mobile account. We used Google Navigation in Barcelona at Mobile World Congress. That's how we got around. And you know, so that's a different network entirely on a different continent, and it worked just fine. And there are other options. If you don't like Google Maps, you can try something else too. So.
That's awesome. And the 3G works flawlessly with voice and data. Cause I, that's the big thing. I think people don't realize that, like, people say, well, what am I going to have to use voice and data at the same time? Well, who cares if I'm on a road and I have a phone call? Well, you know, knowing my timing and being on the road, I drive late at night. I sometimes have a couple hundred mile drives every night. So sometimes I like to call my friends and just talk and try to pass the time as I'm driving. And I want that voice and data. So strictly for that, for the 3G, for that, I can do it. And if I need to send out an email as I'm making a voice call, which I'm sure everybody at Smartphone Experts has to do at least a few times a day. Hey, send me that email. Okay, I'll send it to you right now. What file do you need? Attach it, blah, blah, blah. There you go. See ya. And, you know, people, I think, really kind of discount the value of having that voice and data simultaneously.
Sure. I just, literally, while you were talking, I just ran a speed test on it. I just got 1.3 down, 1.16 up. You know, previous test, 1.5 down, 1.74 down, 1.18 megabits a second down. So it's pretty quick. Here's a test I did connected to Wi-Fi, and it was 3.4. So, no, this thing will handle data just fine.
Oh, God, you're making me want to spend $600. You're killing me. But if I jailbreak the iPhone and unlock it, I can get $500 on Craigslist anyway. So
there you go.
Hopefully a medical student won't come over and try to buy it from me, because then I'll be done. Nobody gets that medical student joke off Craigslist anymore. Only a select few people.
I didn't get it. Sorry.
Well, this medical student ended up through Craigslist at murdering somebody.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. See? Yeah. So don't ever answer a Craigslist ad from a medical student. Just ignore it. They're very dangerous. So, one app that I want to use, and it sounds very selfish, but one of my favorite things technology-wise these days is Fios. I love the upload speeds of Fios, especially since you can understand, you upload videos. It uploads videos so fast, uploads, and, you know, we haven't had any Skypiness on this phone call, so the Fios signal here is pretty strong, and I got great bandwidth. And one of the things that I was really intrigued about using, I used it a little bit on the HTC Hero, was the Verizon Fios app for Android.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we don't think this is going to come to the iPhone App Store anytime soon, if ever.
Yeah, probably not.
Probably not. So that's the one app, besides the ones you've mentioned, which I use all those applications just about, the flight track, all the other stuff that you talked about. And, you know, I'm leaning a lot towards getting this Nexus One, especially since I can control my DVR, my Verizon Fios DVR, remotely, and I can control my TV and use my Nexus One as a remote for my Fios TV. I think that's pretty cool in itself.
You know, something else we haven't talked about is widgets. In addition...
God, how come? That's my fault. Sorry.
Yeah, no. On Android, you have a number of home screens. You know, it's not like the iPhone world just keeps scrolling right and right and right and right as you go. The Nexus One has 5 home screens by default. The Droid has 3. There are applications you can have that will give you more. You know, give you 7, 9, whatever you need. And one of the first questions you always get whenever I do a video with this thing is, what's that calendar widget you have on there? Because I have my main, you know, home screen is, it's actually a number of icons that I'm not a big fan of having just icons staring you in the face, but it works. So I have icons of basically my frequently used apps. And then I have a 2x3? Yeah, it's a 2x3 widget of calendar. So I can see everything coming up just at a glance right there. And there's so many widgets you can get. And a lot of apps have widgets too, like Flight Track. It's a standalone app, but it also has a widget that comes with it. So I can just swipe over to the left here and say, all right, well, there's my next flight. And it shows it to me right there at a glance. There's a great news and weather widget that comes with the Nexus One and Android 2.1. There's a utilities widget that's on there by default. You know, there's just all sorts of widgets. There are music player widgets out there. Weather widget, you know, just anything you can think of. So you can really do a lot more with the home screen.
So basically these widgets are all updating in real time as you're looking at them as well, correct?
Yep. Well, and speaking of updating in real time, Google Maps just got an update the other night that lets you make Google Maps your live wallpaper. With Android 2.1, you got, quote, live wallpapers, so it's not just a static picture there. And some of them you can interact with. I use, it's called grass, so it's like blades of grass with the sky behind it, and the sky changes color throughout the day, so it helps me as I'm sitting in my office with no windows or the windows closed, and I can tell what time it is without having to get up and look. It's a little pathetic, I know. But with the newest Google Maps, you can make Google Maps your live wallpaper, and it will follow you. You know, GPS works with it. The map will move as you move, and it's, Dieter and I were talking about it. We don't care how just useless and ridiculous it is. It's damn cool.
Yeah, and one of the things that it was gone for a while, you speak of widgets, one of the app reviews they did on Android Central that I really enjoyed, and the app was gone, and now it's back, is Beautiful Widgets. I like the way they look, because you can customize the icons on your Android device, correct?
Yeah, it looked and felt a little bit too much like HTC Sense, and I think HTC took exception to that. But they worked with them, and they've re-released now. Yeah, I mean, you have clock widgets, you have just anything you can think of, you can build a widget for.
Oh, man. Jeez. Smartphone experts need to give me a job so I can pay for these phones. This is killing me.
I just bought myself this Nexus One, so you know, we don't get all this stuff for free, man.
I'm gonna say you're $1,200 in already. Oh, I don't want it for free. I just wanted a part-time job to pay for this stuff, because when the full-time job's not even doing it, it's a disease.
No way about it.
But I don't want the cure for that. I'd like that. That's my addiction is technology. So I guess that's about it. I mean, I'll have a million more questions for you on Twitter. But other than that, I mean, you've been a big help, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to buy a Nexus One. This is, you know, I don't know if I should say thank you or not.
You'll thank me, trust me.
This is awesome. Yeah, I'm definitely going to, because this will add them. You know, the thing with T4 Show, the thing with me as a tech enthusiast, I have to go outside my comfort zone, outside what I'm used to. And, you know, this brings great content that I don't see a whole lot of Nexus One videos out there outside what you guys do and a couple other people. It's really kind of weird. It's all just kind of centered towards the iPhone, the apps, the accessories, which I'm guilty of too. Or even there's not even that many Palm Pre. So like to bring different content to the YouTube channel or to your site is good. And I was waiting for you guys to start the Android Central podcast for quite a while, and I'm glad you finally started doing it.
Yeah, we took our time, didn't we? Well, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
glad
it.
Glad we finally had you.
Awesome. So, I mean, you know, have me back anytime, and I'm sure I'll have a million more questions for you. Hopefully Dieter's still not mad about the Drobo watch. I hope not. We had a little watch war there for a while. He had a very big watch, and I decided to strap a Drobo on my wrist with electrical tape, and I caused quite a bit of damage to my left wrist, and, you know, it's fully recovered now. It took a while, though.
I want no part in that war.
It was well worth it. I was actually going to strap a small grandfather clock to my arm. Yeah. I could not fit it. It was too painful. I at that point, I figured, you know what? This is silly. He's probably just laughing at me, and he's already won. Anyway, just by ignoring me, he's won.
Well, again, Michael, we thank you, and everybody go check out the T4 Show if you haven't by now.
Cool. And check out Android Central, of course.
Please do.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Yeah, you can follow me. You can go to T4Show.com. Please subscribe to the YouTube videos at T4 Show Videos, and also follow me on Twitter at Michael Mann. And make sure you follow at Android Central on Twitter, and also at Phil Nickinson. Did I pronounce that correct?
You did. Thank you.
Thank God.
All right, everybody. We will see you later.
Thank you.